You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, good evening. I want to talk a little bit about Black Lives Matter.
One of my favorite subjects.
They issued their 2020 Global Impact Report. And among their many successes they touted, they also noted that there was a failed program that was called Dear White People. It was a campaign that they did. And they actually said in their report that that campaign led to more racism and violent rhetoric directed against themselves and their mission. It's not really clear what they expected when they put this thing out that said, Dear White People.
Is that how it started? I mean,
that's how, Dear White People.
The condescending tone, Dear White People. Can you imagine what happened if I were to start a conversation saying, Dear Black People?
Oh, of course.
Can you imagine?
And it was also against white cops. So the purpose of the campaign, their stated purpose, was to get white people to understand why BLM supports violent riots. They said the reason riots and violent demonstrations work is because it makes people, especially white people, uncomfortable. You can't ignore them when they're waving torches in your faces. It scares you. It puts you on edge, which is exactly where you need to be. So here's BLM, you know, with the violence thing. This is their way of trying to make people comply. And they actually were very successful with the Democrats in this.
Well, wait a second. They weren't only successful with the Democrats in this. Let's just take a look at recent news, recent history with the Derek Chauvin trial. The threats given by groups like Black Lives Matter, predominantly Black Lives Matter, championed and doubled down by Maxine Waters, a congressperson, right? And AOC.
Yes.
And Rashida Tlaib, people in
and
the
Pelosi.
Squad. And Pelosi. And especially Pelosi. Active threats while the jury is being impaneled, which is not a sequestered jury, that they would basically, you know, let's get confrontational. And let's, and the chapter president of BLM out of New York, even after the trial, said, this is just the beginning. We're not done. This isn't justice yet. And issuing more threats in New York. So they've, and you saw what they did at the taqueria, right?
Yes, yes.
That,
terrible.
A white owned taqueria that after they got what they referred to as justice, which was a conviction of Officer Derek Chauvin on all charges, that was not enough for them. And what they did was scare the bejesus out of not only the patrons at the taqueria in New York, but the owners, calling them effing white people. So it's absolutely working.
Well, and you know, to that point about the taqueria, I felt so bad for that owner. That is because the conviction of Derek Chauvin was not really what they want. They could care less about Derek Chauvin. They want no police. That's what they want. But you know, back to BLM's Dear White People, Alicia Garza, who you know better than anyone, was one of the founders of Black Lives Matter.
An avowed Marxist.
She said the response of Democratic Party officials to every outbreak of violence, barring new programs and opening new veins of spending, connected activism and revolt. Now, let's just remind Alicia Garza that a 501(c)(3) organization, or C3, I should say, is prohibited from encouraging violence, even if the Democratic Party rewards it. So how are they getting away with this and keeping their 501(c)(3)?
Well, you know, speaking of founding members of the Black Lives Matter movement, it's been all over the news recently that a second founding member, Patrice Kallour, another avowed Marxist, used Black Lives Matter money from this 501(c)(3) nonprofit profit organization to purchase 4 multi-million dollar houses in the United States. And what I liked about what she said, and IRS, United States government, Department of Justice, are you listening? When the families of Michael Brown, right, Michael Brown's family, and the black woman that was killed in South Carolina during the raid, she was shot and killed by police during the raid, I forget her name, but their family are complaining that they saw no money from Black Lives Matter. No money at all was donated from Black Lives Matter, this 501c3, to their families. Patrice Kallours said, look, Black Lives Matter is not a charity. Well, if it's not a charity, then why the heck do they have 501c3 status? Why do they have that? Of course it's a charity. They're asking for donations. It's a total Marxist fraud.
What Patrice Kallours also said was that if you need money, go to the government and get reparations. That's what she said.
And you know what? She's successful in that, because that's exactly what's going on, especially in the state of New York. They are giving blacks slave reparations. And the people that, you know, it would be hard pressed for them to find anybody that they'd ever talked to in their family that were members of slaves. We're talking about something that happened 180 years ago.
Well, this Dear White People campaign was educational, supposedly, to make sure that white people know that cops are gunning down black people in the streets. Now, let's just talk about some facts and figures here. In 2019, 14 unarmed black men, of which 8 threatened the police with something other than a gun, were killed by police. 14 unarmed black men. So take that down to 6, because 6 apparently weren't threatening with something.
But you don't have to remember, Linda, and we saw this in the Michael Brown case that I worked on and analyzed in my book. You don't always have to have a gun to create, or a knife or a bludgeon or any kind of weapon other than hands and fists and strength, to eminently threaten a police officer with serious bodily injury or death.
And I'm speaking from their terms here as well. So understand that a lot of what they say is their rhetoric. The campaign also said, dear white people, black officers are not murdering unarmed white men in the street. That seems to be almost exclusively white officer behavior. Stop gaslighting. Well, according to a study by African-American Harvard professor Ronald Fryer, unarmed blacks are no more likely to die at the hands of white police officers than unarmed whites. But unarmed white people are more likely to die in the hands of a black police officer than a white officer.
Well, the other thing, and I know this professor, actually, I think his background's in economics, so I thought this was very interesting as a criminologist looking at this professor. But also, the forensic fact and statistics are twice as many white people are killed by police officers in the United States every year than black people. Twice as many whites.
Well, between 2009 and 2018, an officer was 5 times more likely to be killed on the job than a criminal was to be killed by an officer, and 3.2 times more likely to be killed by a black person than a non-black person.
And I have to, here's where I differ from the professor, because when I wrote my book, the book is full of statistics. And I found that at the time I wrote that book, a police officer's chance of being killed by a black person was 9 times more.
Wow. Well, one of the things that BLM has boasted about is how much money now is being redirected from policing to community outreach. What they didn't tell you is that since they've helped accomplish that, there is an orgy of murder that's been taking place. And that is a huge increase in homicides across the country, which would translate into 4,000 more people dead because of their defunding the police and adding money to so-called community outreach.
And you know, Linda, that's so true. And if you look at pretty much every large metropolitan city where you have defunding the police, the violent crime rate and specifically the homicide rate has gone through the roof. I just heard the chief of police of Oakland, California, speaking on Fox News. I just heard him speak on Fox News. And he said, and of course, they've gone through a major defunding over there. And in Oakland, California, people don't know that is predominantly a person of color, predominantly Black community. They've gone through several chiefs of police just in the last 4 years. But here's my point. With all of this anti-police rhetoric from the mayor, the city council, and from the community, and the defunding, and doing exactly what you're talking about, removing people from, removing money, resources from law enforcement, and putting it into whatever community services is, they have seen, according to the chief of police, they've already got 45 homicides already this year, which is ridiculous. And he said it's 200% increase in their homicides as from last year, 200% increase.
Yeah, it's huge. And again, in 2019, Black people were 50% of the homicide victims, but Blacks were responsible for 89% of those Black homicides.
And that's very consistent because, you know, I keep track of the violent crime and the gun violence in the city of Chicago. You and I have had many discussions about that. And we consistently find when I check the daily statistics of what's going on in Chicago, that people of color, predominantly Black people, are responsible for 97% of the homicides of people of color. They are, the last time I did the statistics, it was ridiculous. It was some, they kill 536% more people in Oakland and people of color than the Chicago Police Department does. It's absolutely an incredible statistic to talk about.
In Oakland?
No, in Chicago. Did I say Oakland? Yeah. I'm sorry, in Chicago. Okay. Can you imagine that?
No, I mean, it's crazy, and we don't hear about any of this, and I want to talk about that in a second. But also in 2019, whites, including non-Black Latinos, were responsible for only 10% of Black homicides, yet Blacks were responsible for 25% of homicides against white, including non-Black Latinos. So, you know, the narrative that we hear all the time is so incorrect and so misleading. And, you know, if BLM is going to take credit for some things, they need to take credit for all of these additional deaths that have been caused to people of color, primarily.
By people of color,
but just deaths in general. And there, according to this professor, that there's an additional 2,000 whites, Latinos, and Asians also dead. So, you know,
And again, this is a Black professor who really got a lot of pushback from his research, but I read his research. I thought it was well-sourced. It was well-vetted.
So, you know, the last thing I want to say about this is while these woke corporate companies in our country are donating millions of dollars to Black Lives Matter, they are helping increase the violence and the death of Americans.
No, they really are. And you know, this, I think this is a good time to transition to what's recently happened in the city of Columbus, Ohio, where a police officer shot and killed a teenage girl who was attacking another Black girl. These are two Black girls. This one girl with the knife had attacked, I guess, other Black girls and people. And then the police are called. There's a frantic 911 call. Please come, you know, right away. This girl is attacking us. This girl is stabbing us. And when the police officer gets on scene, it's in progress. And she's actually got a girl up against a car and she's got the knife in her hand and she's stabbing she's trying to stab this girl. We're talking milliseconds. I don't want to get into that case any more than that. But here's my point. The rich oligarch celebrities, politicians, the sports figures, in this case, LeBron James, without any investigation, without any knowledge of the dynamics of what happened in this incident, which is currently being investigated, he pushes out on Twitter, and he's got 50 million followers on Twitter, and he posts a cell phone photograph of the shooting officer and then posts a threat of "you're next." Now, he had to take that down, but going back to what you talked about at the beginning of Dear White People, the threats by these militant Marxist activist groups like Black Lives Matter are completely changing the paradigm of what is happening in policing and what is happening in our criminal justice system. It's turned our system of policing and of criminal justice absolutely upside down.
You know, and what would have happened, which nobody's talking about, to the young girl who was being attacked with the knife had the officer not fired? You know, I mean, nobody's talking about that. And let's say that the police didn't come, Ron. Let's just say that they didn't come. Then likely there would be a different Black child dead. So, I mean, come on, let's get real about this. What is the Obama's, the lady that was his close advisor?
Valerie Jarrett.
Yeah, Jarrett. Yeah, she came out and she made some horrific comment about, you know, this young child that was murdered by police. This is incendiary. It's wrong. You know, she then touted Black Lives Matter. You know, everybody's life matters. And I'm sick to death of hearing that one person's life matters more than another. In this situation, one person or the other most likely would have died. And there you go.
Well, let me answer your question. Okay. What would have happened if the police didn't come? Right. Well, just that week, all right, that this incident has occurred, just this past week, we had two 13-year-old black girls get into a fight. One Black girl pulled out a pocket knife and stabbed the other Black girl, 13-year-old girl, to death. So that's the answer to your question. It's the answer to your question of what happens also when police don't come, and what happens if police are so scared about the consequences of them responding to Black on Black crime that they slow down, they fail to come, they decide, you know, this is not worth my career, this is not worth being outed by somebody like LeBron James, this is not worth a divorce, me getting prosecuted, me getting personally sued because I lose my qualified immunity, all of those things. And what you have is complete chaos and anarchy in America.
You know, I want to just take that to a logical step. In any of those situations, and let's take this one and let's make it a hypothetical, because I don't want to use that particular case, but a hypothetical just like it. The officers come, somebody's about to stab somebody. What would people have them do? What would Valerie Jarrett have them do? Would she have them stand back and wait to see if she stabs the girl? What do you expect? The officers are called to a scene with much emotion on the call, you know, that get over here, we need you right now, you know, that somebody's getting stabbed. What would you have an officer do? Because it's a no-win situation. If the officer stands by, they're going to be accused of letting somebody get murdered. If the officer doesn't show up, they're going to be accused of somebody getting murdered because they didn't show up. They just can't win.
Well, you know, let's just, before we take our first cup of coffee, I mean, let's just personalize this for a minute. And I don't know anything about LeBron James's family or whether he's got kids or not, but using a hypothetical, let's say LeBron James is the police officer or he's in his house and somebody do a home invasion and the person has a knife and is going to stab his wife or is going to stab one of his kids. Let's just use that hypothetical because that's a real hypothetical. Is LeBron James not going to do anything because it's a Black life trying to kill his wife or trying to kill his children? Or is he going to try to defend his wife and defend his children? Or if LeBron James was the police officer in this particular, you know, situation, where you got the two teenage girls, one trying to stab the other, in imminent jeopardy. What would LeBron James do?
Or if LeBron James' daughter was in a fight with somebody and they were about to stab them, what would he want an officer to do? What would he expect? I mean, this is so unfair to our police officers.
But you know what? That's what I'm saying. These people, uninformed, emotionally engaged and emotionally captured in a second, they tweet out something very damaging and threatening to a police officer, but it's not Dr. Ron and Linda, okay? It's a guy that's got 50 million followers, probably predominantly people of color. Does that enrage the situation? I just want to leave it with that rhetorical question, and I'll get you your first cup of coffee.
The America Out Loud family is comprised of patriots in the true sense of the word. We know that if America fails, the world will fail. It is incumbent upon us to carry the torch for liberty and the Constitution to help save America for future generations to come. AmericaOutLoud.com. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Coffee. And one more quick thing. The other Black life that mattered in this was the girl about to be stabbed. And had the police not been called, had that girl gotten stabbed and died, we would have never heard about it. And nobody ever would have tweeted anything. But because an officer shows up to save that girl, they are just absolutely, you know, denigrated in the media. This is just all wrong, and people need to see that. You know, studies show, Ron, that people do not want the police defunded, and they do not want to not have officers show up. But as we stand back and watch this happen and say nothing, this is going to continue.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right in what you're discussing, and what I find just atrociously reckless and negligent about people like LeBron James or Valerie Jarrett tweeting out these incendiary comments about law enforcement is you never, ever, ever hear people like Jarrett or James discuss the serious issues, behavioral issues of black-on-black crime in America. I mean, I just mentioned a bunch of it. You never hear a peep about that. And I also agree, and we have many Black friends, and they're all very angry about this, about what's happening within the Black community. But here's the problem. Nobody, even though the vast, vast majority, like you say, are against Black Lives Matter and against this terrible rhetoric and this the spouting that America experiences systemic racism, which is absolutely not the case. You'd think we were back in the 1950s. They don't say anything about it. They're intimidated by the violent Black Lives Matter and, you know, people like that. They're worried about being outed, about losing their jobs, about losing their lives, for God's sakes. And they don't say anything. And America will not change. We will not get rid of this violent Marxist infiltration of our country and the dividing of our country by these Marxists until the Black community and people of color speak out.
That's absolutely true. You know, and speaking of people losing their jobs, there are teachers that are losing their jobs right now because they are speaking out against this horrible critical race theory that President Biden is shoving down the throats of all American parents. And what is critical race theory? So I want to talk about that for a second, because a lot of people really don't know exactly what it is. And, you know, just a kind of a brief history before we really get into what they're doing now. This has to do with Marxism. Critical race theory has to do with Marxism. the Marxist left built its political program on the theory of class conflict. And that is exactly where critical race theory comes in. Marx believed that the primary characteristic of industrial societies was the imbalance of power between capitalists and workers. And the solution would be revolution. And if we could get the workers to gain consciousness of their plight, seize the means of production, overthrow the capitalist class, and usher in a new socialist society, then they would have their Marxist, you know, socialist society. So in the 20th century, a number of regimes underwent those types of revolutions, and every single one ended in disaster and failed. Socialist governments in Soviet Union, China, Cambodia, Cuba, they racked up body counts of over 100 million, Ron, of their own people. So if you remember, the gulags, the show trials, the executions, the mass starvations, those are all Marxist ideas. And it's a dark place. Marxism is a dark place to be in life. Well, now in the United States, Biden, our president, our pretty much Marxist president, he wants to bring critical race into our schools to teach as an academic discipline for our children. And they're teaching the children that by virtue of their color, I mean, they're wrong, right? I mean, just by virtue of their color, they're wrong. Talk about racist. You know, they throw racism out everywhere. And this is to have this constant race war. This is at the heart and the foundation of Marxism. And now they want to teach the children that if they're Asian, if they're white, if they're Hispanic, they're wrong. And they're trying to have this big race war. And that's what they're starting in school.
Well, as you know, before I was in law enforcement, I was an educator, taught in high school. And then through my law enforcement career, I've been an instructor, a professor, and everything. About 4 years ago, I stopped doing that. I stopped working for university where I was teaching in the Masters of Forensic Science program. And the reason I did that, not only because my practice increased, but here's the thing. I saw things changing in the educational system, and I did not believe that facts mattered anymore. And that's the thing. History doesn't matter anymore. Forensic facts don't matter anymore. It's all about feelings, you know, whether a person feels they did well or not. It's not whether they factually did well or not in the school. But, you know, here's the thing that I see, and I'm glad you pointed out this critical race theory because it is so damaging to the United States of America, our sense of freedom, our sense of who we are as a person, our democratic Republican culture. And so what we have, Linda, succinctly, is we have a battle every single day between education and indoctrination. That's what we've got. We've got a battle between educators that want to educate, that want to teach the basics and want to teach you real United States history and values. And that's it. It's a factual history of the United States versus indoctrination, which deals with because you have a white birthright, you are automatically, has nothing to do with how you feel personally, you are labeled automatically as a racist and part of a systemic racist society in the United States that does not exist in toto. Is there racism in America? Yeah. What is the level of that racism? It's very minor.
Yes.
Very minor compared to how it's portrayed. But you are absolutely right. This is a Marxist infiltration of our education system. The United States Department of Education, by the way, I don't even think we should have one, but the United States Department of Education, and for certain, our president, who is supposed to be the leader of our country and the leader of our free world, him to espouse to the American public that the United States suffers from systemic racism throughout our society. That means every part of our society is reckless, it's uninformed, and it's dangerous.
Well, here's a little bit of a way to tell what they're trying to do. If you hear the words equity, social justice, diversity and inclusion, culturally responsive teaching, we're talking neo-Marxism here. Equality, which was a principle that was in the Declaration of Independence, was codified into law with the 14th and 15th Amendments, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. That is rejected. Equality is rejected by critical race theorists. Equity, which is a different word and does not mean the same thing, is defined as something like, I'll give you an example, like suspending private property rights, seizing land and wealth, and redistributing them along racial lines. That's their equity. That's not equality. It's completely different. And these words matter. When you hear our politicians using them, be very, very afraid. The Republicans are using equality. The Democrats are using equity.
Well, the reason that they're using equity, and just go back over those terms, you know, that you just used, those are all socialist Marxist terms. Look at what happens in our real factual history when there is a transition between a democratic society and a republic, and then moving to a socialist, Marxist, communist structure of government and society. You have what? What happened in Cuba? A redistribution of wealth.
Yes.
What happened in Russia? A redistribution of wealth. What happened in China? A redistribution of wealth. A seizing of property. What has happened more recently in Venezuela, which was a very... it was one of the richest, I think it was at one point, it was the second richest per capita, the second richest, wealthiest nation in the world per capita. And what happened now? Now they're in abject poverty. Their people are starving. Why? Because there was a national takeover of private industry, of private businesses. There was a seizing of property and a redistribution of wealth. And look at what has happened to, look at North Korea, for God's sakes. How many examples do people need?
Well, every single one has failed. An equity-based form of government would mean the end of private property, individual rights, equality under the law, federalism, and freedom of speech. I mean, every single one of those things is anti-American.
You know what's interesting, and I'll try to be succinct here. Every single American, so-called American, and every single politician, such as AOC and Tlaib and the Squad and Maxine Waters and everybody like that, that talks about these terms, equity, redistribution of wealth, things like that, they would never go and live in one of the countries that actually practices
these
things.
But they're trying to make this country that. Yeah, that's what I don't understand.
But look, here's the deal. All right. If you go to every single one of the countries I just mentioned, all these Marxist, communist, socialist, leftist countries, you have a stratification. There's only two strata. There is the rich political elite oligarchs and right. politicians, and then you have the unwashed masses of the public. You don't have a middle class. You don't have private enterprise that's not controlled by the government, and that's why you look at every one of these people. Maxine Waters, she owns, you know, over four houses. They're all multi-million-dollar mansions. She doesn't even live in the district that she is a politician in. Okay, look at AOC. She goes from being almost an unemployed bartender to a $10 million contract with Netflix, and then she's completely protected. And they have, do you know how stupid this is? People can't see this?
It's not only stupid, it's extremely dangerous. So our federal government, our FBI was holding workshops on intersectionality theory.
What is that? I don't know.
The Department of Homeland Security was telling white employees they were committing micro inequities and had been socialized into oppressor roles.
You know, I've got to look at this. I have to look up these words because I have no idea what you're talking about.
The Treasury Department held a training session telling staff members that virtually all white people contribute to racism and that they must convert everyone in the federal government to the ideology of anti-racism. And the Sandia National Laboratories, which designs America's nuclear arsenal, we talked about this before, sent white male executives to a three-day re-education camp where they were told that white male culture was analogous to the KKK, white supremacist, and mass killings. They were then forced to renounce their white male privilege and write letters of apology to fictitious women and people of color. How humiliating is that?
And you know why they do it? Because they don't want to lose that federal job and those federal benefits. This is exactly like a Soviet or Chinese communist re-education camp.
Exactly. Now let's talk about our children. In Cupertino, California, an elementary school forced first graders to deconstruct their racial and sexual identities and rank themselves according to their power and privilege. In Springfield, Missouri, a middle school forced teachers to locate themselves on an oppression matrix based on the idea that straight, white, English-speaking Christian males are members of the oppressor class and must atone for their privilege and covert white supremacy. In Philadelphia, an elementary school forced fifth graders to celebrate Black communism and simulate a Black power rally to free 1960s radical Angela Davis from prison, where she had been once held on charges of murder. And in Seattle, the school district told white teachers that they're guilty of spirit murder against Black children and must bankrupt their privilege in acknowledgement of their thieved inheritance. I mean, this is happening all over the country. Your children are exposed to this in school, and parents need to know and get your kids out of those classes, out of those schools, refuse to go, make some noise, don't allow this. And I just want to say one more thing, Ron. We have currently elections happening all over the country. These are just special elections that are happening, you know, maybe for school district positions, maybe for an empty seat somewhere in Congress, whatever it is. There are special mayors, that type of thing, special elections happening. Well, in our town, all that we have to vote for is three school board positions. You and I don't have any kids in school at this point. You know, our kid
days are gone, Linda, just letting you know.
But I personally spoke to the candidates and I asked them about themselves. And the last question that I asked was, what do you think about critical race theory teaching in our schools where we live? And their answer is what made up my mind as to who I'm voting for. Everybody needs to get at least that involved. They need to know that this is not going to be in their schools. Now, Biden wants to force it to be in the schools. He wants to make it mandatory teaching. Parents have got to speak up. This is damaging your kids. But parents are still the last bastion of hope. They need to teach their kids at home that this is bunk and that this is wrong and that everything that school teaches them is not right. And they need to be the teachers at home and instill in our children, that we are not racist, that people are all the same. People of any color are all the same. And we need to, you know, hold those values dear and not let them be taken away by our schools.
Yeah, you know, and this was an education for me, Linda, and I try to stay up on this stuff. But, you know, during this last conversation we're having, you mentioned several phrases that I did not know what they meant. Okay, and if Dr. Ron, who tries to stay up on this stuff, doesn't know what those phrases mean, then I would suggest that probably the vast majority of our listeners and followers and fans to Talking While Married and America Out Loud don't know what those terms are either. So two things, and I appreciate this conversation because you brought up two things to me that just reinforces what I need to do as an individual, as a Texan, and as an American. Number one, I need to, when people spout this rhetoric, I need to remember those terms and I need to look them up and I need to get the etiology of that. Where does that come from? Number one. Number two, it's important to remain engaged in the political process. The other side wants you to be disengaged. That's the whole reason for the chaos and everything that's going on in America, the violence, the riots. They are deliberately distracting. Look over here where all the flames and the smoke and the bells and whistles are. Don't look over there while they are quickly, legislatingly, through our leftist leaders, changing the fabric of America. And it starts, like you said, Linda, it starts with parents and it starts with individuals engaging on what is happening politically in their own communities. How about our last cup of coffee?
I'm ready.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist, death investigator, and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. Are you a fan of CSI shows and documentaries? Are you fascinated with how death investigators like me solve high-profile death cases like you see on the news? If so, then I encourage you to join me as I unpack some of the most high-profile police and civilian-involved death cases in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. Read all about the forensic evidence you never heard on the evening news. You can get a copy of my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, today by ordering it on my forensic site at www.dronmartinelli.com. DrRonMartinelli.com. And remember, without truth, there is no justice.
What we were just talking about with critical race theory, there is a parent who did speak out, and his name is David Flynn. He's the father of two out of Dedham, Massachusetts, and he has two schools in that public school system. He also was the head football coach. Judicial Watch is suing on behalf of this man for speaking out, and he was fired from his coaching job for speaking out against what his children were being taught. And I'm not even really saying speaking out. He went to the administration and asked about it several times, because here's an example, Ron, of what was being taught. This was being taught in a class that was seventh grade history, which was listed as World Geography and Ancient History 1. But the kids were taught issues of race, gender, stereotypes, prejudice, discrimination, and politics. Not sure that that has to do with World Geography and Ancient History 1. But in one assignment, the plaintiff's daughter was asked to consider various risk factors and mitigating factors that two people, one identified as white and one identified as black, might use to assess each other on a city street. Included amongst the various factors that were given that they could choose from were skin color, gender, age, physical appearance, and attire. Black, aggressive body language, and wrong neighborhood were among the risk factors purportedly assessed by the white person. The white and police officer were among the risk factors purportedly assessed by the person identified as black. This father was concerned about the change in curriculum and that this didn't seem to fit the curriculum that they were supposed to be being taught. So he asked about it. And his list of concerns were that they changed the curriculum of the seventh grade history class without notifying parents or having a course description and syllabus available for parents to review. This new seventh grade history class curriculum contained coursework on politics, race, gender equality, and diversity that were not suitable for 12 and 13-year-olds. The seventh grade history teachers not teaching topics of politics, race, gender equality, and diversity objectively. And the seventh grade history teacher is using a cartoon character of herself wearing a t-shirt supporting a controversial political movement, which said, and I have a photo of it, Black Lives Matter on the t-shirt. And the seventh grade history teacher is using class materials that labeled all police officers as risks to all Black people and all Black people, all Black males as risks to white people. So the father, you know, in complaining about this, was fired from his coaching job.
Wow. On so many different levels, that's problematic. First of all, number one, I can see why Judicial Watch took up the case, because I think that the man who will be the plaintiff in this case, the teacher and the football coach that was fired, has really got a great cause of action. Number one, it's a clear violation of his First Amendment rights, of freedom of speech. He can say, he can make any criticism or ask any questions that he wants, number one. Number two, the school board ultimately is charged with the task of approving curriculum in any high school. Now, you know, I used to be a division dean, although it was in a college, but I was an educator and I taught seventh grade history. And none of that information that is that you've discussed with me should have any part of European and ancient history. None of that, because none of that is pertinent to ancient history. If you want to create a separate class where you want to discuss those issues, then that's fine, and you can do that. You can submit a curriculum, but it has to go before the school board, and then parents are apt to be informed. That is your mandate by the educational code, that you inform the parents of what the curriculum is going to contain and provide them with an opportunity to opt out. And it's clear, according to what is being stated here, that none of that protocol took place.
Well, that's true. And I'm going to respectfully disagree with you that I don't think that that should be submitted as anything to teach in school.
Well, no, but anybody has a right to submit. Anybody has a right to submit a curriculum. You can submit anything you want to the school district for consideration. That's also part of your freedom of speech. Whether or not it should be entertained and accepted as an approved curriculum by the school district, that's a totally different subject.
Well, and here's the problem, and it's been a problem for a long time, is that the school districts are teaching these things regardless of what parents think about it. And I absolutely disagree with that, because schools cannot take the place of parents. And there are things that they should teach in schools, like reading, like writing, like arithmetic. And what they're doing in schools is taking things like arithmetic and saying, oh, well, this is racist. It's racist math because the children of color can't do it as well as the white children. Well, then be a better teacher.
Or be a better parent.
Or talk to the parents, do something. Some children don't have the fortune of having great parents. That's just a fact. So whatever color that child is, it doesn't matter. Any child that's struggling should be able to be helped in school. But taking these subjects, the sex education, this whole critical race theory education, teaching them that cops are bad, this is absolutely horrible.
Well, it goes back to what we talked about before we had a cup of coffee. And that is, every single day in our school system, we are fighting a fight between equity and equality. Okay,
yes.
So let me just define it as a former teacher. Equality is that a curriculum is presented to everybody, race, gender, sexual orientation, color, culture, whatever. Everybody is is given that curriculum. Everybody is taught that curriculum. People have different learning skills, right? They have different wheelhouses of learning, even as adults. I find as a teacher and as a professor that the light comes on differently with different people. Equality is making sure that you provide the opportunities for every student to learn and to grasp what you're teaching. Equality is everybody gets the same tests. It's an objective test. There are standard answers for that test that are correct answers. You can always argue that there's an alternative answer, but then you have to be able to articulate and justify why that is a correct answer objectively. Equity is no matter who that person is and whether they get the answer right or wrong, no matter what their learning skill is, it's right. And they get the trophy. They get a passing grade. And what is happening now, and you'll see this in universities is quickly taking place, and I fear it's going to happen in the high school and middle school areas, is that they're going to do away with the grading system. And they're going to make the grading system subjective instead of objective.
Well, they're already doing that.
Yeah, but you know, Here's the bottom line. And you're a business owner and you hire people, and I'm a business owner and I hire people. Do you try to hire people based on an objective review of their skill sets and their knowledge base, or what feels good, or what they feel the answer is, or how they feel they should do their job, as opposed to how you need them to do their job and have certain tasks that you need as a business owner to provide a service to your clients? You see what I'm saying? You're not helping these children.
You're not helping
whatsoever. No. Whatsoever. And let me just say one more thing. And we haven't, it's probably time for a different conversation, but this is interwoven. This thing with the seventh grade class with this teacher is interwoven with 1619 theory, 1619 history theory. And if our friends and our followers and listeners don't know what 1619, y'all need to look it up, and Dr. Ron and Linda will have a subsequent discussion of what 1619 revisionist history is in America.
Yeah, I want to see schools go back to simply teaching the basics. They need to teach reading, writing, arithmetic. And beyond that, they need to teach civics and history. The true way that history happened, and you know the and civics, okay? But they need to keep their opinions to themselves, and they need to keep this critical race theory out. And for a parent to go and complain and then lose his job as a coach, the kids loved him as a coach, loved him. He was a great influence on those kids. And you took that away from those children and you downgraded their school experience because you had these wacky theories that you want to teach kids, and you have a teacher wearing a Black Lives Matter shirt. If a student comes to school with a thin blue line shirt, they will be sent home. You know, I mean, this has gone way overboard. Parents need to be aware. They need to get involved. This is harming our children. When I think about how they want to take math out of schools, especially in Oregon, Washington State, and California, because it's considered racist, because they say that children of color cannot do it properly. That's racist. To say that children of color cannot do math the same way that white kids can is racist. And there are any amount of mathematicians that have there are people that have gone into space because of mathematicians that are Black.
You know what? You took the words right out of my mouth. There were Black women in the Manhattan
Yes.
Project. Okay, Black women in the Manhattan Project, which were mathematicians that assisted in developing the fissionable theories that created the atomic bomb and atomic energy. They were Black women.
And please
don't tell me you want to talk about racism. You condescendingly state that Black people of color are not smart enough to understand the concepts of math and higher math. Okay, so what you want to do is you want to dumb everybody down to fit your narrative of equity, which is absolute Marxism. Okay, you give nobody credit for anything, and it goes all the way back. I mean, you can connect the dots to all of this stuff and go back to Georgia and the Georgia voting laws and tell Black people that they are not smart enough to get an ID card
exactly.
to allow them to vote. I mean, are we that dumb? Are we that disengaged that we do not see what the progressive Marxist left is trying to do to people in the Black community? They are using them as minions, and this will not work out well for Black families and Black children and the Black community moving forward in the United States. It sends us backwards.
Oh, yeah.
It sends us backwards decades. It does nothing to move the Black community forward. And the Black community has got to speak up. The white community is trying to speak up, and we are getting canceled. We are losing our jobs. Some of us are losing our lives. We're losing our careers. We're losing everything trying to speak for you. We're getting canceled as racist in speaking up for you, the Black community. For God's sakes, speak up and let's get rid of these Marxists that are indoctrinating instead of educating our children.
Yep, they're painting us all with the same brush. And you know, when you talk about something like math, Ron, the thing is, it doesn't matter what color you are. Some people are good at it and some are not.
I'm terrible. I flunked every
math. You're a PhD.
And I flunked every, I mean, this is the God's truth. And we laugh about it now. I flunked every single math class outside of basic math. I flunked every single one. I had to go to summer school every single year. I don't get anything more than basic math. I'm sorry. It's a right brain, left brain thing. There's other things that are great in my wheelhouse. Math and music don't happen to be them.
Well, exactly. And the thing is, everybody in life is given different gifts. So, you know, to make that a race thing is absolutely wrong. Parents, pay attention to what they're teaching your kids at school and speak up.
Wow. What a conversation.
Well, there's so much going on.
There's so much to talk about. There is so much chaos in violence in the United States. I know our friends and listeners, here's what I'm gonna try to pretend I'm you for a minute. You don't even like to watch the news.
No.
You don't even want to turn on the news, right? You throw your shoes at the television. You are so upset. You know, I saw today that Dana Perino from Fox News, who is a wonderful woman. She used to be a spokesperson in the Bush administration, okay? She was the press spokesperson for President Bush. She said she was so fed up with what is going on right now. She said, hey, look, I'm having a bad day. And, you know, and God bless her. I said right back to the television, I said, you know what? You are absolutely right. And this is a very measured woman, very educated. I love Dana Perino. When Dana Perino is having a bad day, y'all are having a bad day. Okay, so I understand that. And you and me, if it wasn't for our engagement with America Out Loud and Talking While Married and your wonderful program, Ladies of Liberty. And we, as being patriotic American citizens, we need to stay engaged in politics. But I'll tell you what, if it wasn't for that, you know, I wouldn't watch the news at all. But see, that's what they want. They want the progressive left wants you all to disengage so they can do what they need to do. So on that note, Linda, can you tell people, can you share with people how they can remain engaged on America Out Loud and with Talking While Married?
Well, just go to AmericaOutLoud.com. There's a whole new website there. Lots of wonderful articles by wonderful writers. And they just make you really, really think, and they put things in perspective. And what we need right now is perspective, because we are being misled by the mainstream media. We're being misled by our politicians and by the progressive left.
And we'll see you on the radio.